to them, "Do you see these great buildings? I tell you, not one stone will be left upon another stone here. It will all be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Temple Mount, on the Mount of Olives across from the temple, not on the Temple Mount, I'll start over. When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives across from the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew came to him and they asked him privately, "Teacher, when will these things be and how will we know the sign that this is about to happen?" Then he began to say to them, "Beware that you're not led astray. For many people will come and they will say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many people astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be frightened. These things must take place. But the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be earthquakes. And they will be earthquakes in various places, and there will be famines. But this is the beginning of the birth pangs." This is the gospel of the Lord. I was thrown out of I have something else to do. Gosh, you know what? Steve Bell was here, so I'm all discombobulated in a really good way. Lori Hansen's here with a book called The Little Bit Scary People, and if the children will join her, the young people, she's going to be out in the comfy chairs. This is a really great book. So if you're not young and you want to go, that's okay too. Word for Children's open to children of all ages, actually. I'm going to talk about the destruction of the temple and people who are a little bit scary. Yeah, all right. "Now, I was thrown out of bed with a violent jolt. And the earth shook, and things flew across the room, and furniture fell on me. And because I was asleep, I really had no idea what was happening. And when I woke up, I was in the dark. And then the earth rumbled and shook some more, and it was after a time that my dad came and found me and carried me out of the house that he and my mother had worked to buy, that they had only owned for 9 months, and in 60 seconds, that house and everything in it was either destroyed or buried as the earth rattled that house apart. And I was 7 years old. At 7 years old, I learned that the earth is a hostile place. This planet is not a friendly planet. And if we didn't believe it from our own experience, we can begin to believe it by what Jesus is telling his disciples. There will be wars, there will be famine, there will be earthquake, nations rise against nation, things are torn apart, and this is not a safe place. If they didn't believe it then, they could certainly believe it in 79 when Vesuvius exploded and buried the whole west coast of Italy. In every age, people have believed that they are facing the end times. I think about these people just because we're coming off of the 100th anniversary of the Great War. The people that lived through the Great War, they must have thought that was the end of the world. Is all the young people were shipped off to fight a senseless fight not of their own making. We have things in every generation that terrify us. They make us wonder, is this the end? Or how are we going to live through this? And more existential questions. What are we doing here? What is life all about? And where are you, God? Times like this cause us to wonder if God exists at all. At 7 years old, my dad carried me from that rubble of a house and put me in the station wagon that was parked in the front of our property. My dad was buck naked. It was the only time I ever saw my father naked. And he got into the car and slumped over the steering wheel and wept. And it was the only time I ever saw my father cry. And for me, it was the end of the world, because all I knew of the goodness of God, I knew from my parents. My parents provided me shelter, safety, love, food, everything I needed, just like the scriptures told me God did. And when they couldn't keep me safe, my 7-year-old brain knew that God couldn't keep me safe either. The world is hostile. Jesus begins telling everyone how hostile it is. But he says, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be afraid. This must take place. Well, why is that? Frankly, I think it's because we can't agree on anything. Human beings seem to be in a battle to see who's right about everything. Which is the right race? Which is the right country? Which is the right religion? Which is the right education? And we do go to war over that. It seems that extremism rises in every quarter, in science, in education, in religion, in nationalism. We, left to our own devices, rip ourselves apart. Without some common ground and without a call to something higher and more precious, we think we're it. Even within the Christian church, Christians argue that their denomination is the right denomination. All of that is abomination. If you want to know what's right, we have to start looking to the God of life. If we want wars to cease, we have to start caring for those who are cast aside. We have to start looking for those who are driven from their homes because they don't have shelter or food or safety. There are times that I am really proud of the West because we open our arms to people who are refugees, and then there's times I wonder if the refugees are going to rip us apart. Stable governments and stable countries cannot withstand an influx of millions of people for long. Look what it cost and look what it took to build this country. Look at the arguments we have in Calgary about whether we should continue expanding, building to the north. We ourselves cannot see the future. We cannot know for certain how it will end. And we struggle with all of the components of our life while we yearn for God's reign to come and fix it all for us. Children are sold into sexual slavery in our time, on our continent, in our city. And we, what do? I have no idea. I don't know where to start. But I do know that if I depend upon my own understanding, if I lean upon my own strength, or the strength of my community, it will fail me. My parents failed me as a child. My childhood effectively ended in 60 seconds. After that day, I would not go to sleep unless I was in a room full of people who were awake. And that lasted well into high school. I remember being at my grandparents' house. It was the time, you know, we didn't always have automatic drip coffee makers. We didn't always have those things, right? Do you remember when those things came out? They were this marvel of modern science, but I was a little kid, so I didn't know anything about it. I didn't drink coffee. I was not in that conversation. I didn't know anything. But I remember being at my grandparents' house, and my grandparents lived in this at the edge of this valley, and there was a huge fire at this particular time, so there was a lot of ash flying around in the air. And so we always went to Grandma's on Sunday afternoon, so just like every Sunday afternoon, we went to Grandma's, and there was, you know what it's like when it's smoky out? It was like that, because that happens here all the time, right? It was like that, and there was ash flying around in the air. And we went to Grandma's house, and Grandma had one of these newfangled things. Of course, I didn't know that. And do you remember these things when they started to draw up the last bit of water from the reservoir well, the sound those things make? Really loud, like filled the whole kitchen, filled the living room. I was in the living room, and I was already in a panic because there was ash in the air, and I didn't know what that was. And I heard that sound in the kitchen, and I thought it was a volcano. Which is fine, except that ever since the earthquake, I was haunted in my nightmares by volcanoes. And the dream was always the same, although in variations. And the dream was my dad would pile us into the station wagon, and we begin to drive away from the lava that was coming after us, and we could never drive fast enough. And I would wake up in terror. And when I heard that coffee maker, I was living the nightmare. And that's how our world is, you know, not if the terror is not real, we make it real in our minds. And so I started to freak out, but Grandma was there, and Grandma said, "What?" And I said, "There's a volcano," and she said, "No, there's ash from the fire, and there's a coffee maker in my kitchen." She took me to see it and to hear it, and I calmed down. I dare say I'm a pastor today, not because there was an earthquake, but because there was a grandmother. And that grandmother in that kitchen started to point me to a reality bigger than the one I knew, a truth I couldn't know as a child. And that truth is, I don't know everything. Years after the earthquake, I said to my parents, my dad, by the way, he was 33 and my mom was 29. Three kids and their world shook apart. And I asked my parents later, like, so what did you learn? You know, after the drama and the trauma is over and 30 years have passed, what did you learn? And I asked them independently of one another, and they said almost exactly the same thing. They said, the things that matter most in our life are the things we can't see. The things that matter most are the love of our family, the relationship with our friends, and the strength of the church, the call and the love of God sustaining us through whatever may come. I'm a pastor because of Grandma and because of my parents. Because they pointed me to the reality of a God who loves us and knows way more than we do. Whatever the trials and the struggles are that we live through in our days, they are nothing compared to the love and the strength of God, who holds it all in the hollow of a hand. My world shook apart, but somehow God brought it back together. It was a miracle, actually, that I ever set foot in a church. Except, well, you know, I was drugged there for another 10 years or so. But, you know, as soon as I could, I ran from the church as far as I could. Because I wasn't safe, and I knew God couldn't keep me safe. And out there in the dangerous world, I found other people who pointed to God. Other instances, people who recovered from all sorts of nasty things and lived to tell the tale about how God had pieced their lives back together, and the lives they had now were more than they had before things shook apart. When I set foot back in the church on my own will as an adult, it's because I wanted to get some answers from God. How could you abandon me? How could you let this happen? Where are you? Where were you? Why do you continue to let this happen? Am I preaching to the choir yet? Why? 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 And do you know how God answered? God didn't answer my whys. God answered me with who. Who? I am the Lord your God. I'm the creator of heaven and earth, the cosmos and everything in them. You know those ants that tick you off? I'm their God. You know that river you love? I'm its God. You know your broken childhood? I'm God of that too. The planet is a living, breathing thing, and I am its God. And I will not let it all go to hell in a handbag. Not on my watch. And my watch is long. And I, the Lord your God, am sending you out into a hostile world. You know it's hostile. But you're letting people suffer. Because you also know I'm God, and you're letting them live with one half of the story. Get out there and direct them to me. I hold it all. Why should people suffer? Why should they thirst? Why should they wonder when I am God and you're mine? Look, my plan is for you to get out there and love people. I don't have any hands but yours, and you're pointing an accusing finger at me. Stop doing that. Now, I'm abbreviating the experience. Probably 10 years God and I had this conversation. But you know what happened? There was another earthquake in the same place. My parents had rebuilt on the same property. And the morning that earthquake hit, I wasn't there. I was in Pasadena, some 25 miles away maybe, but my kid was there with my ex-husband. So I piled my bicycle, my emergency kit, food, water, everything I could think of that hurting people might need into the trunk of my car, and I head off into the darkness towards my parents' home. And it was pitch black, and I remember being on the freeway, and I was thinking, I can't see the road. There's no streetlights. There's nothing. It's pitch black. How am I going to know if the highway continues in front of me or drops off into a pit? And as I'm driving on the road, I come up with the strategy. Wait, there's a car in front of me. I'll just keep enough distance between me and those taillights, and if they disappear into the darkness, I'll stop. Honest to God. I got to the off-ramp. My parents' exit, the telephone poles and the utility poles and the streetlights, everything was on the ground. All the walls were broken. And miraculously, I could drive my car to my parents' house. I get to their house. The doors of the house are wide open and no one is there. I gave thanks and I panicked in the same breath. And then I remembered, oh yeah, Mark's mom lives not far from here. They probably got in the car and they went to check on her. It's all good. And then I stood around and I thought, what am I going to do? And I looked across the street and there was a couple sitting in those low beach chairs, you know, those webbed ones. They were sitting in the driveway of their house, and their house was, part of it collapsed and part of it broke open. And they were sitting there in the driveway of their house, like just staring like this. And without thinking, I went to them and I said, are you okay? How are you? We're alive. We're good. Is everyone out of the house? And they looked at each other and they said, we have kids. They forgot they had kids. And I went into the house and I got their children and brought them out to them. And I had food and water and things in my trunk, and I opened my trunk and I cared for them. And when I look back now, I think that's what God does with us. We are called to love. We're called to enter in. We're called to understand and have compassion. And our heartbreaks and our challenges and our struggles are not really for us. They're for the people around us. You are not alone in your challenges. You're not alone when you face death. You're not alone when you're hungry. You're not alone when your house is shaken apart. You're not alone when you're a refugee. You're not alone when you're a sex slave. You're not alone. Jesus says, you will see all these things, but these are the beginning of the birth pangs. Not the death knell, the birth pangs. The world is a hostile place, but we're in it together in the purview of a God of love. And that God of love calls for us to care beyond whatever our own tragedies may be and into the tragedies of others. When God reclaimed me, God translated my experience into something hopeful. I'm a living, walking, breathing symbol that the hostile world does not kill us. It doesn't have the final word. It never has, and it never will. What's being born is a community, a worldwide, global community of human care. A community of love and compassion that companions people through things that are difficult and seemingly impossible. A community that understands we're held in the hollow of the hand of God, who has a really long watch and an extremely long reach. We live and breathe through the love and care of God who gives us our life and our breath, our hope, our community, our joy. And it's not ours to hoard. It's ours to let it overflow from our lives, especially to those who don't believe it exists. Lots of stuff going on in our world. There are lots of chances for us to get out there and walk beside people, to love, to care, to bring healing and hope, and to point to the one who is the source of life and hope and truth. It's terrible these days. I don't think I'll ever be Pollyanna because I've been through too much. But I know it's not the end. Because we actually have the last chapter. And the last chapter sees the tree of life coming down to form a new community on earth. That tree of life grows on either side of the river of life, and it flows the river of life from the throne of God, the God of justice and grace and healing and love. And the tree of life bears fruit in every season, a different kind of fruit. And its leaves are for the healing of the nations. We're being led to a time where we all know universal truth and universal love, and it heals the world. And God is asking us to join in that mission. So go on, get out there. People need you. Get out there and heal the world in the name of the one who heals us all.